Welcome to Alabama Short Stories, when you're a little behind on your Alabama history. I'm your host, Sean Wright. I found an Alabama road map in my grandfather's papers. It is a 1929 Kaizo road map of Alabama, published by Standard Oil Company. When you look at the legend, the roads are categorized as first class, second class, and third class. First class was hard surfaced and good gravel. Second class roads were graded or light gravel. And third class noted to make local inquiries in bad weather. Now what's missing is the interstate system, which would not be formed for another quarter century and even longer before all the interstates opened for use. Now this map was published soon after my grandfather had attended Auburn University. I noticed some scribblings on the backside, and I realized that he had tracked and timed his trip from Huntsville to Auburn. His directions were south through Birmingham and Montgomery before turning east to Auburn, all on U.S. highway roads, mainly Highway 31. The majority of the trip was on first-class hard-surfaced roads. It was good gravel from Huntsville to Athens and then Decatur if he went that way. He could have traveled the dirt roads through Madison and Belmina to Decatur. From Montgomery to Tuskegee, there were various surfaces, but it seemed to be all graded or light gravel from Tuskegee to Auburn via Notasauga and Lochapoka. It was a 311-mile trip that took him 6 hours and 47 minutes. Compare that to today, where the same trip would be on Interstate 65 and 85 with up to 6 lanes of traffic. According to Google Maps, it is now a 244-mile trip through Montgomery and would take 3 hours and 35 minutes if you drove the speed limit and didn't get stuck in beach traffic in Shelby County. The evolution of our roads in Alabama goes back hundreds and even thousands of years. Each generation improves upon what existed before. The first roads were just paths animals used to get from one place to another. Animals, like humans, would take the easiest way, avoiding steep hills and swampy land. The Indians followed those same trails, which also helped them hunt these same animals. And as settlers moved in, pack animals were used and followed the Indian trails. 2 centuries ago, before Alabama became a state, it was still a frontier. The Indian trails were widened for the wagons, and a first-class road would be 12 feet wide and cleared of stumps and roots. One of these first-class roads was the Federal Road. It entered Alabama from Columbus, Georgia, and journeyed south through Mobile on its way to the Port of New Orleans and locations west. So many soldiers and settlers moving west used the Federal Road that in some places the roadbed was 12 feet lower than when the road was first established. Here's a fun fact. The Conestoga, or covered wagon, led us to drive on the right side of the road. The driver would walk or sit on the left-hand side so they could operate the brake. The wagon would ride to the right side of the road so the driver could see down the middle. Also, a wagon or carriage driver would sit to the left so they could use their dominant hand for the whip. By the early 1800s, driving on the right had become law. Even though the 12-foot road with no stumps and roots was first class, they could still be swampy if not maintained. Improvements came in 3 ways. Corduroy roads had saplings spaced horizontally, making ridges and bumps in the road. Shell roads were used along the coast, where an abundance of oyster shells were placed on the road. And then there were plank roads. They were constructed of 2 parallel rows of timber, also known as sleepers, embedded in the road 3 or 4 feet apart. Planks 8 feet long and 3 or 4 inches thick were laid across these sleepers. Ditches were dug on the sides to help with water drainage. Now, when Alabama became a state, the legislature made counties responsible for routing, building, and maintaining roads. These roads were for farmers to get their crops to train stations and river ports. There was no money for construction, so the counties required adult men to spend a minimum of 10 days each year on road building and maintenance. Now, these men were not civil engineers. They were farmers with skills in other areas. Serving on a road crew was often a time for farmers to catch up with other farmers instead of pulling stumps, grading, and leveling the roads. Improvements were slow. Now, the need for good roads was apparent to many people, and the first call came from bicyclists. The late 19th century saw a craze in bicycle ownership, and depending on the time of year and usage of existing roads, cyclists, or wheelmen as they were called then, would face dirt, gravel, potholes, and mud in the spring. The League of American Wheelmen was founded in 1880 to protect cyclist interest by lobbying state and national governments. They published the Good Roads magazine and soon had over 1 million readers. Cyclists argued that improving roads would not only help cyclists, but farmers as well. And within a short time, cars would share these same roads and increase interest in good roads. The good roads movement had started. Now, good roads was a no-brainer. Everyone wanted good roads, but maybe not the same kind of roads, and besides, who's going to pay for them? A farmer in Butler County needed a good road to get his produce from his farm to the train depot in Greenville so he could sell his produce. He was not interested in a road that went to Montgomery, much less Huntsville and beyond. One of the things that kicked off the good roads movement in America, besides cyclists, was the free delivery of rural mail. In 1896, the U.S. Post Office started delivering the mail in rural America on an experimental basis. 6 years later, it became a permanent service. Having seeds and equipment mailed directly to a farmer was probably a huge help in their day-to-day life. The only catch was that the Postal Service required satisfactory roads. They couldn't afford to have their mail carriers bogged down in the mud. In 1901, an inspection was made and service would be discontinued if the road was not in good condition. Good road associations sprang up around the country, and Alabama would be in the middle of it. The state was still feeling the effects of the Civil War, and leaders realized that good roads would bring economic recovery to a region that desperately needed it. Now, to be clear, these good road associations did not build or fund the roads. It was the government's responsibility, and mainly the county government of each state. Many people were involved in the good roads movement in Alabama, but four deserve mentioning. Senator John Bankhead, John Asa Roundtree, Governor Emmett O'Neill, and Alma Rittenberry. John Asa Roundtree was born in Hartsell, Alabama, and became a publisher as an adult. He moved to Birmingham in 1896, becoming president and manager of the Age Herald Publishing Company. He established the North Alabama Good Roads Association with then-Alabama Congressman John H. Bankhead 2 years later. In 1906, that association merged with others to form the Alabama Good Roads Association. The goal of this association was to help influence the state to create the Alabama Commission to manage and fund a highway network in the state. Emmett O'Neill was the 34th governor of Alabama and was the son of Edward O'Neill, the 26th governor of Alabama. Emmett O'Neill is best known today for playing a prominent committee role in the Alabama Constitutional Convention of 1901 that added a poll tax, literacy test, and property ownership requirements to help disenfranchise black and poor white voters. He ran for governor in 1910, and the last of his seven-point platform was to form Good Roads. In a speech to the Alabama Good Roads Association, he pledged, "The power and prestige of my administration to good roads." 2 years later, he gave another speech titled, "We must construct roads that start somewhere and end somewhere." After he was elected, the state legislature created the Alabama State Highway Commission in 1911. The Good Roads movement was highlighted by events that would stand out in the public eye and be promoted across the state and the country. The Birmingham Ledger newspaper and others sponsored pathfinding tours where motorists would drive between locations, such as Birmingham to Montgomery, to promote good roads between major cities, not just farm to rail. One of the more famous pathfinding adventures was the 1919 Transcontinental Motor Convoy, where 81 Army vehicles drove from Washington, D.C., to San Francisco to test the mobility of the military during wartime. The difficulties encountered on this trip influenced one participant, Lieutenant Colonel Dwight D. Eisenhower. When he became president, he helped create the interstate highway system. In 1913, Roundtree established the United States Good Roads Association and installed the senator from Alabama, John Bankhead, as its president. Bankhead would become known as the father of good roads due to his role in the passage of the Federal Highway Act of 1916. It would be known as the Bankhead Bill and made funds available to state highway departments to help with the cost of building and maintaining roads. Roundtree incorporated the Bankhead Highway Association in 1916 in honor of the work Senator Bankhead was doing. The association helped create state associations to assist in developing this national highway that would stretch from coast to coast. It would be a southern version of the Lincoln Highway, the first transcontinental highway. Different associations would promote their own routes throughout the country with names such as the Jefferson Highway, Lee Highway, Dixie Overland Highway, Jackson Highway, and the Beeline Highway. The Jackson Highway would be created to honor General and President Andrew Jackson. This Chicago to New Orleans route was conceptualized by Alma Rittenberry, Birmingham resident and member of the United Daughters of the Confederacy. I mention her membership because the idea of the Jackson Highway was to honor a man whose involvement against the Indian nations won white supremacy for all time for America and opened up to civilization the widest and longest stretch of territory in the world. The United Daughters of the Confederacy were established to honor their ancestors and promote lost cause ideology. They did this by funding monuments across the South and in front of almost every courthouse in the state. These same monuments are being removed across the South as citizens take back the narrative of their relatives. Rittenberry thought the monuments were a waste and wanted something more practical and useful. A highway that traveled the country's length was a better use of time and money. When the Jackson Highway Association was created, Rittenberry was immediately pushed to the side when she was not given the role of chairman, but of chairman of the Women's Auxiliary Committee. Despite the role, she hit the road, giving stump speeches up and down the length of the proposed route, trying to get support from stakeholders. In 1915, her idea of a route straight through the center of Alabama, a beeline, began to unravel. Pathfinders had been traveling the route through Alabama and an alternative route through Mississippi. They came back and recommended the shorter route through Mississippi to New Orleans as the preferred route. Now, the route would cut through the state's northwest corner and the communities of Florence and Muscle Shoals. If you're a music fan and know of the Muscle Shoals rhythm section, the Swampers, you might have seen the front of the Muscle Shoals Sound Studio in Sheffield. Above the door is the iconic blue and white sign with the address 3614 Jackson Highway. In 1917, during a meeting at Birmingham's Tutwiler Hotel, the association decided to follow the Mississippi route. Alma Rittenberry immediately resigned. She gave the president a piece of her mind and ended by saying that Andrew Jackson was turning in his grave since he was at least courteous to women. But that wouldn't be the end of Rittenberry. She and few others formed a new group to promote the Beeline Highway from Chicago to New Orleans. She already had a head start by tacking on the Dixie Beeline Highway that traveled from Chicago to Nashville. Again, Rittenberry was sidelined by men on the Beeline Committee, but she wouldn't put up with it for long. She worked her way into the field secretary position in charge of pathfinding the route of the Beeline Highway. The path would travel south to Montgomery, where the Beeline split. The west route continued to New Orleans, and an eastern route to Florida ended in Tampa. The Beeline Highway follows U.S. Highway 31 in North Alabama to Montgomery. Now, while researching for my book and podcast about Shades Cahaba High School in Homewood, I discovered that Alma Rittenberry was one of the guest speakers at the opening ceremony in 1920. It only made sense. Highway 31, the Beeline Highway, was right next to the school. Ironically, while the Beeline Highway picked up speed, the Jackson Highway project seemed to sputter and come to a halt. In 1923, the Hoosier Motorist magazine said the highway, lain in a profound coma, rich only in its dreams of past splendors, and fallen into obscurity and disuse as a transcontinental trail. These name routes were popping up around the country. Each would be marked with signs in different color and brands to show what highway you were on. The Bankhead Highway was identified by a sign with yellow bars at the top and bottom with a BH in the middle. The Jackson Highway was similar, with black bars at the top and bottom and a JH in the middle. The Beeline Highway had bars on the top and bottom with a stacked B and H. A series of numbered highways soon replaced the confusing set of signs, and in 1926, the Federal Bureau of Public Roads coordinated a system of numbers and graphics implemented nationwide to help travelers get where they were going. The Good Roads Movement disappeared with the onset of the Great Depression. There was no money to construct new roads, but movement organizers had set in motion a movement gaining momentum across the country. Resources were poured into good roads from local, state, and federal governments. Governor O'Neill, Senator Bankhead, John Roundtree, and Alma Rittenberry helped improve our state's economy by recognizing the importance of good roads and leading our state in the construction of these routes. Now, before I leave our story on good roads, I want to tell you about one more Alabamian who made a difference on our highways. Baldwin County native Miller Reese Hutchinson attended Mobile Public Schools, Marion Military Institute, Spring Hill College, Auburn University, and the Medical College of Alabama. He patented the klaxon and hearing aids for deaf people before becoming Thomas Jefferson's chief engineer at Edison Laboratories. We now know the klaxon today as the car horn. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Alabama Short Stories Podcast. I'm happy to announce that Volume 2 of the Alabama Short Stories book is now available and features stories from Seasons 4 through 6. You can purchase it and Volume 1 online at Amazon.com and other online retailers. If you'd like to support your local bookstore, you can purchase it through bookshop.org, where your purchases will help financially support independent bookstores. You can find links in the show notes and on the website. See you next time at Alabama Short Stories.